I can honestly say I think it's for every single one of you here. And I hope it encourages you and blesses you. But the title is, To Enlarge the Place of Your Tent. Yes. And I want to start by looking in Isaiah. So I'll start us off. Isaiah 54, and we're starting at verse 2. Enlarge the place of your tent. Stretch your tent curtains wide. Do not hold back. Lengthen your cords. Strengthen your stakes. For you will spread out to the right and to the left. Your descendants will dispossess nations and settle in their desolate cities. Do not be afraid. You will not suffer shame. Do not fear disgrace. You will not be humiliated. You will forget the shame of your youth and remember no more the reproach of your widowhood. Now that sounds wonderful. And I love it, I love those verses, they really are wonderful, but when you start to think about the process of enlarging your tent, it's talking about enlarging your borders, and that generally means that you're going to have to get out of your comfort zone, and it definitely means change. And when you start to look at it in that context, a lot of us don't like the idea of it when you start to think that it could mean change, it could mean doing things that you've never done before. I can say this because I'm speaking from experience at the moment. I've got things going off at work, things going off at home, I'm at college, and since I've come back in the new year, it really seems like God's moved everything up a gear, which was a great shock to my system, because I already thought that I was operating in fifth gear, and he's stuck it up a gear, so I don't know what mode I'm operating in at the moment, but everything seems slightly manic. And that's how you feel out of control, you feel very uncomfortable, and when you get in that situation, it's human nature, you start thinking, it's no good, something's got to give, I can't possibly do all this. And it's always the case that the thing that you want, you think, well, I'm going to have to let go of something. It's always the thing that you like doing the least. But, although that's what I've been thinking about, I have decided that I am going to press through, because God's been telling me that I need to enlarge the place of my tent. And that means that he's taking me into another level, and boy, don't I know it. But I'm going to stick there because I am determined that I am going to enlarge the place of my tent. I'm going to read from the word for today. These are a couple of scriptures that I've kept hold of that have come out over the past couple of months. But the first one, it's entitled Great Rewards. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. Dr. Bernard Vittoni says, as we age, we lose the ability to distinguish between the negative anxiety associated with work, stress and tension, and the positive type that's a natural and exciting part of trying something new. As a result, we become more fearful and avoid anxiety-producing situations. When that happens, the desire for safety keeps us stuck in neutral. Trying to avoid risk is like trying to avoid living. Without a goal to strive for, you stop growing altogether. Your enemy is well aware of the rewards that come from spiritual growth, and he wants to rob you of them. God knows what awaits you on the other side of your fear, so he keeps encouraging you to press on by saying, I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. God told Abraham, fear not, I am your shield, and your reward shall be exceedingly great. Now if Abraham had buckled because he feared the unknown and untried, he'd have missed something exceedingly great. God told Joshua, be strong and courageous, lead these people to the land, obey all the law, then you will be prosperous and successful. Do you want to be successful? Then step out and obey God. Concerning Satan, the Bible says, he is the father of all that is false. Satan will use every trick in the book to con you into missing your blessing, so don't let him. Press through your fear today and claim the blessing that God has promised you on the other side of it. Like I've just been saying, when you're involved in the process of enlarging your tent, you feel that what you're being asked to do is totally beyond your capability. And so that's when we start to say, well, I'd rather not change. I think I'll just put up with the things that I know. It's not particularly great, but it's better than anything new. So I'm not going to change. I'm just going to keep on plodding. These are the kinds of conversations that I know I have with myself, but saying to you, does that sound familiar? What I'm going to do is I'm going to show you some of the people who I think are tent enlargers, and I hope it starts to encourage you. I'll start with Abraham. Can I have my volunteer for the first reader, please? Don't be shy or I'll volunteer somebody. Thank you, John. We're starting in Genesis 12. Genesis 12, if you could read verse 1 to 4 for me, John, please.
Thank you. Now the Lord had said unto Abram, get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house unto a land that I will show thee, and I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee. And in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran.
Thank you. So at 75, God says to Abram, leave your house and your home and everything that you're comfortable with, everything that you've worked towards, and I want you to wander around in a tent. Now, how do you think you'd respond if God said that to you at 75? He says, come on, we're going to go camping for a while. I'm not telling you where you're going, and I'm not telling you how long you're going to be out there. I think the response might be not so pleasant, like, you can cook or I'm staying put. But if we want to pass it round and we'll go on to the next one, pass, if you don't mind. Ken, would you mind reading for me? Hebrews 11 verses 8 to 10. This is just reinforcing what we've just read.
By faith Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going out to a place which he was to receive for an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith he lived as an alien in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise. For he was looking for the city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God.
Now that's marvellous. God told him to go and he went, which is which I think is marvellous in itself, but he did it, and he did it in faith. You know, he believed in what God was saying, he obeyed him and he went. If we could just carry on by reading verses 11 and 12. Pauline, would you mind reading it? Just the 11 and 12.
By faith, even Sarah herself received ability to conceive, even beyond the proper time of life, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore also there was born of one man, and him as good as dead, at that as many descendants as the stars of heaven, in number and innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore.
Now, those last two verses there, I think it's wonderful, because Abraham considered God faithful who had made the promise. God was the one who made the promise, and Abraham decided that God's promise, he'd got more faith in God's promise than what he had in the situations and circumstances. And because he was prepared to stand on the promise of God, the result was that he received in his inheritance, and he was the father of many nations. It tells us that his descendants were more than the stars in the sky and the sand on the shore. Now, just from reading that, I think you'd agree with me, Abraham was definitely a person who was looking to enlarge his tent. I've put here as a sort of footnote about Abraham, if you're obedient and enlarge the place of your tent, what starts as a painful experience will always end in blessing. Moving on, I want to look at Moses. Now, Moses was the person who God used to enlarge the borders of Israel's tent. Wasn't particularly enlarging his own tent, but he was used as the person who enlarged the borders of Israel's tent. Who's my next reader? Zig. Exodus 3, verses 7 to 10, please. Would you mind, Ziggy?
Exodus 3, did you say?
Yeah. 7 to 10, yes, please.
And the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people which are in Egypt, and have heard the cry, by reason of the taskmasters, for I know the sorrow, and I am coming down to deliver them out of the land of Egypt, and to bring them out of the land unto a good land, and a large land, unto a land flown with milk and honey, unto a place of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites. Now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel came unto me, and I have also seen their oppression. Wherewith the Egyptian oppressed them. Come now, therefore, and I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt.
Thank you. So there you see, this is where God calls Moses, and he tells him the plans that he has, that he wants to see his children, the children of Israel, brought out of Egypt. And Dad, can you do the next one? Exodus 14, verse 13 to 16, please. Exodus 14, verses 13 to 16.
Okay. And Moses said unto the people, Fear ye not, stand still, and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show to you today. For the Egyptians whom ye have seen today, ye shall see them again no more forever. The Lord shall fight for you, and ye shall hold your peace. And the Lord said unto Moses, Why criest thou unto me? Speak unto the children of Israel, that they go forward. But lift you up the rod, and stretch out thine hand over the sea, and divide it. And the children of Israel shall go on dry ground, through the midst of the sea. Amen.
So here, it's just like when we're speaking about Abraham. To start with, when Moses was called, he was saying, Who me? I'm not capable. I don't think I can do the job. But later on we see, when all the odds are stacked against them, when there's a massive sea to cross, and they can see the Egyptians are hot on their heels, Moses is the one who has the faith. He has faith in God. He really trusts and believes that what God says he will do, he is going to do. And he calls out, and God tells him what to do. Now, if you think of the children of Israel, they're watching on. They've not got the same relationship like Moses has with his God. He's the spokesperson, and they see him with a stick whacking at the sea. Can you imagine? They've got the Egyptians coming behind them, bearing down on them, and they think, This is our leader. What a time for him to crack up. What is he doing? Bashing away at the sea with this stick. But Moses' faith wasn't in the stick. His faith was in what God had told him to do. And that's what he was standing on. He was standing on what God had promised. He knew that that stick couldn't part the sea, but he knew that God could. And so he was faithful and he was obedient. And the sea parted. See, if the Israelites had gone on what they thought would happen, they wouldn't have seen victory. And it took a man like Moses to believe that God would do what he said that he would do, regardless again of the situations and circumstances. Moses stood, he believed more in his God than what he could see. And as a result, the Israelites walked into freedom. And because of Moses' actions, they had begun to enlarge the place of their tent. And that's what happened. The Israelites enlarged the place of their tent. They came from a place of poverty, a place of slavery, and they were moved into a place of freedom and prosperity. And that happened on the very day that they went across the Red Sea. It just took 40 years for this to click in, to realise what they had. That brings us on to Joshua and Caleb. Now these were some really good tent enlargers. I love Joshua and Caleb. If we can look at Joshua 1 and verse 1-7, who's next reader?
Now it came about after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, that the Lord spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' servant, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, cross this Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I am giving to them, to the sons of Israel. Every place on which the sole of their feet treads, I have given it to you, just as I spoke to Moses. From the wilderness and this Lebanon, even as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, as far as the great sea, towards the setting of the sun, will now be your territory. No man will be able to stand before you all the days of your life. Just as I have been with Moses, I will be with you. I will not fail you or forsake you. Be strong and courageous, for you shall give this people possession of the land which I swore to their fathers to give them.
Thank you. Now this is where Joshua's picking up where Moses left off. And we see here how God gave into Joshua's hand. He goes on to tell us about Jericho. Now again, in the natural, you're the children of Israel and you've been told you're going to walk around Jericho. You're going to walk around Jericho 7 times. And somehow, bizarrely, that means there's going to be a victory. In the natural, they would think, what on earth are we doing here? We've come over the way, we've been in the desert for all these years. Now, eventually, we're crossing over. It was the next generation that were actually going over. Aside of Joshua and Caleb, they were the only two left. What on earth are we, why are we doing this? But it was Joshua who again believed in his God. He stood on the promises of God. Wasn't interested in the situation and the circumstances, because he knew that what God said he would do, he would do. And that is why we've just read about the promise that he gave him. And when God gives you a promise, you know that promise will come to pass. No matter what the situations and the circumstances, if you've been given a promise by God, rest assured it will come to pass. We also go on to just, it happened previously this, but when Moses was there and he sent a group of people to go out and spy the land and to return with a report. And when the spies went out, they came back and they said, oh, you know, there was loads of people and we felt like grasshoppers in their sight. We were just nobody. How on earth can we conquer these people? But the Joshua and the Calebs, the tent enlargers, they were the ones that came back with a report that said, "We are more than able to go and possess this land. We can certainly do it." And that is the heart and the spirit of a tent enlarger. Regardless of the situation and the circumstance, they will always say, "We are more than able because God is for us." We can go to Joshua 14, verses 6 to 12. Please. Who's the next reader? Joshua 14, verses 6 to 12.
Are we on, Graham? Thank you. Then the children of Judah came unto Joshua in Gilgal, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said unto him, "Thou knowest the thing that the Lord said unto Moses, the man of God, concerning me and thee in Kadesh Barnea. 40 years old was I when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to espy out the land, and I brought him word again, as it was in mine heart. Nevertheless, my brethren that went up with me made the heart of the people melt. But I wholly followed the Lord my God. And Moses sware on that day, saying, Surely the land whereon thy feet have trodden shall be thine inheritance, and thy children's for ever, because thou hast wholly followed the Lord my God. And now, behold, the Lord hath kept me alive, as he said, these 45 years, even since the Lord spake this word unto Moses, while the children of Israel wandered in the wilderness. And now, lo, I am this day 85 years old. As yet I am so strong this day as I was in the day that Moses sent me. As my strength was then, even so is my strength now, for war, both to go out and to come in. Now therefore, give me this mountain, whereof the Lord spake in that day, for thou heardest in that day how the Anakims were there, and that the cities were great and fenced. If so be the Lord will be with me, then I shall be able to drive them out, as the Lord said." And Joshua blessed him, and gave unto Caleb the son of Jephunneh Hebron for an inheritance. Hebron therefore became the inheritance of Caleb the son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite unto this day, because that he wholly followed the Lord God of Israel.
Thank you. Now, I think, I just love Caleb. I think he's wonderful. And it's funny that Bill's reading this bit out, actually. I didn't plan it out this way, but when we were coming in the car, we were speaking about something, and Bill said, he has every intent of being here for his 100th birthday, minimum. And I thought, well, that... And he's reading this bit, and that is just like Caleb. Caleb was 85 years old here. When he was promised that he would go out and every foot, everywhere his foot trod would become his, he was 45 years old. But he had stood on that promise for 40 years. And here he was at 85, and he said, "I'm having the mountains. That's where I'm going." And in the mountains, it talks about the Anakites, is it? Well, the Anakites were giants. They were the big people. And here he was at 85 saying, "Let me at them. That's my land and I'm having it. And I'm 85 and I'm going up the mountain. I'm still as strong as I was from when I was 45, when that was promised. And I'm going to have that land and I'm going to take control of it and it's going to be mine. And I'm going to have a party while I'm at it." Caleb, I just pray, Lord, that you would give us all the passion of Caleb. Change didn't scare Caleb. He was the one that went out and said, "We are more than able." And he was the one at 85 that said, "Let me at it. I'm going up to the top." He wasn't prepared to compromise. He wasn't prepared to settle for second best. He knew that he'd got to do some battling, but God was fighting on his behalf. And again, he was standing on the promise of God, and he was prepared to go up and take over that land. And he was a tent enlarger. He was enlarging the place of his tent. I'll finish by going over to Samuel. I want to tell you about David. This is another tent enlarger. I'll read this bit. I love this bit, so I'm going to read it. And we're going into Samuel 17, verses 45 to 47. Now, just to set the scene, and this is Samuel 17, verse 45 to 47. Just to set the scene, we've got Goliath, who's a massive person, wreaking havoc with Saul's army. And no one dare fight against him. He was the champion of the Philistines. And what they said was, rather than all this bloodshed, send me your champion. Send me someone who's willing to fight. And whoever wins, whichever champion wins, they will have the victory. And nobody fancied it, because Goliath was this absolutely huge man and everybody was quaking in the boots. Nobody was prepared to take him on. And every day he would come and say, who's going to fight with me? David, he was just bringing some sandwiches. He was a sandwich boy. He'd been out doing his shepherding, and he turns up and he hears Goliath. And rather than being terrified, just like the rest of the people, and these people were people who'd been in battles, in wars, and had come out victorious, and nobody fancied it. Here was this lad without any armour who'd just come from out in the field bringing his brothers the sandwiches. And he saw red. He got real fire in his belly when he saw that here was this person who had the audacity to come up and say this. And he was fighting for God. He was on God's side, and this was his response. David said to the Philistine, you come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will hand you over to me, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. Today I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds of the air and the beasts of the earth, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands. And that is something we really need to remember. Well, we've spoken before about everyone has giants in their life that they're afraid of. But the point is, it's not you fighting. The battle is the Lord's. And he's already promised that you are a conqueror. He's already told you that you're going to have the victory. And so this is why David was so sure that that was going to happen. Here he was with a sling and a stone. And he knew that God was going to be the victorious one, regardless of what the situation and circumstances look like. Again, he was prepared to say, I know my God, and I know when he says that I'm going to be victorious, then I'm going to be victorious. David was a tent enlarger from that day on, when he fought and he went out in battle on Saul's behalf, on his king's behalf. He always won. He was always victorious, and the land and the kingdoms that he took for his king, because he fought in the name of the Lord, he was always successful. We know from things that we've said before and just reading through the Psalms that David really did know his God, and he knew his God in so many different ways. He received, because he knew of God's mercy, he was able to receive of it. And in that time, like I think Ken was mentioned a couple of weeks ago, that was unheard of, because all there was then was the law, and the law said death. But David knew about God and his mercy, and he received God's mercy. He knew about his loving kindness, and he knew that God was a righteous God. He knew about God's grace. A tent enlarger who is someone who knows their God. You really have to know your God if you're prepared to stand on what he says to you and the promises. A tent enlarger is someone whose hope is steadfast and certain. A tent enlarger is someone who builds their house on the rock and not on the sand. In other words, they rely on what God says, and they rely on God's grace. They don't rely on their own capabilities. You know, there's plenty of times when there's a task in hand and you think, I am more than capable of doing that task. And you might, you know, really believe that there's nothing that can possibly go wrong. I know what I'm doing here. I can do that. And yet, how many times have you seen something that you thought would be so easy, that you felt so certain in your own capabilities, just goes completely wrong? And that's it. We don't have to rely on our capabilities. Even if you're determined to succeed, you can still let yourself down, but God will never let you down. Daniel and Joseph, they were tent enlargers. Daniel stood firm for his beliefs, and as a result of it, he ended up getting thrown into a lion's den because he wouldn't compromise. But again, Daniel was a man who knew his God, and that didn't faze him one bit going into the lion's den, because he knew that his God would save him. Joseph, he was sold into slavery and imprisoned. But both these people, both Daniel and Joseph, they ended up elevated. They were made the second rulers of the kingdom that they were in. They were the rulers' right-hand man. They couldn't, you know, the kingdom just couldn't operate without them. And that's what happens when you're faithful to God. He will make sure that you are elevated. You know, think about people who are tent enlargers, and I thank God for tent enlargers. I was thinking about this, and Bish and GC, you know, they were called out from where they were. They were called out of their comfort zones, but they obeyed. They obeyed and they came out, and they are about the Lord's business. And everywhere they go, both GC and Bish, they are always looking to enlarge the place of their tent, because they go in the name of the Lord. And I just pray that God will bless them mightily, because that's what they want to see, the kingdom enlarged. They are enlargers of tents. But looking at this, looking at all these wonderful people, I have to say that they were never liked very much out there in the big wide world. People thought that tent enlargers were big-headed and arrogant. If you look at poor old Joseph, his own family sold him into slavery because he'd had a dream. They thought, oh, does he think he is? We'll soon sort him out. And off he went into slavery. Saul hated David. All David had ever done was bless him, but Saul hated David because he was jealous of him. And David was persecuted. Saul went after him. And the times that he went after him, and the times that David danced around him, really, and God protected him. But if you look at the Christians in the New Testament, they had something that nobody else had. And as a result, they were hunted down because they were seen as a threat. They were seen as a threat both to the Jews and the Romans. They were caught between a rock and a hard place. They were seen as a threat to the people who believed in a God. And they were also seen as a threat to the people who didn't believe in a God, because they saw something that they had and it unsettled them. And finally, if you look at Jesus, I mean, he was an enlarger of tents, and he was used and abused, he was despised. The Pharisees, they reviled him, they couldn't stand him, and they were the very people whose scriptures Jesus was fulfilling. But regardless of all that, regardless of what the world thinks of you, you need to understand that God is for you. And you are destined to be a success if God is for us. Because if God is for us, then who can be against us? Grace spoke last week about the attributes of living like God. And I was looking at these attributes, and I think it's, you know, reading through them, it really focused my attention, because I would say that all these people who enlarged the borders of their tents had these attributes, and they had to have them to press through. I'm just going to go through. There were 7 attributes. The first one was virtue. The second was experiential knowledge. And like I've been mentioning today, you have got to know your God if you're going to be an enlarger of your tent. The next one was temperance, and in brackets there I've got alert discipline. You have really got to be a disciplined person to push through and see your victory come and to enlarge your tent. Because if you don't have that discipline, then you'll leave it midway and never achieve it. Got here steadfastness, and in brackets again, passionate patience. And when Grace talked about that last week, I thought, you know, patience isn't one of my strong points, but I would say that when I've got the bit between the teeth, I'm quite passionate about what I do, but the two just didn't seem to go together. But then I read about Caleb. He was passionate for 40 years. He waited patiently, but he never lost his passion. He never lost the passion that he'd had, that he was going to get up on that mountain and he was going to conquer the land. Now that is steadfastness. Godliness, brotherly kindness, charity. All these are attributes of people who are determined and intent on enlarging their tent. The other thing that I thought about is how much you actually want to enlarge your tent. And that is it. The choice of how big your tent is going to be is completely up to you. If you don't want to change and you don't want to enlarge your tent, then you won't. If you want to change just a little bit to be a little bit more comfortable, then you can do that. Or are you prepared to go the whole hog and say, I'm going to be enlarged, I'm going to enlarge my tent as far as it's going to go, let's see just how far I can make this tent stretch. I was thinking about, there's a few parables and stories that are in the Bible that made me start looking into this. We've got the one where the owner went away and he gave three men the talents. He gave them, I think we gave one talent, one 2 talents and one 5 talents. And when he came back, the ones that had got the 2 talents and the 5 talents, they had doubled what they'd been given. They had enlarged their tent. They had decided, you know, we're gonna get these talents and we're going to make them work. We're going to enlarge what we've got. We're going to multiply. We're into multiplication. But there was one who was scared. He was scared of change. He was scared of losing everything. He was scared of things going wrong. And he thought, I'm just going to rely on what I know. And so he buried it. And as a result, when the owner came back, that's all he got back, 1 talent. Also looking at the lady who had nothing more than a small cruse of oil in her home. That's all she had between her and starvation. Which one of the prophets was it? Was it Elisha? She went to Elisha with a plight and he said, you go out and you gather as many containers as you can. And that's what she did. She went round to all the neighbours, she borrowed these containers, and as a result the oil didn't run out till she'd filled all of these containers. The point was is the more containers she would have got, the more oil she would have had. And that's what I'm trying to make, that if you're going to enlarge your tent, and there really isn't any limit, the only limit there is what you're prepared to, the limits you're prepared to go to, because God, you know, how can we even presume that we can have the dreams as big and as wonderful and splendid as what God has? It's even beyond what we can dream, ask or think what God can give back to us. God really does have big plans for you. Are you prepared to allow the full potential of that destiny to come to pass? Are you prepared to enlarge your tent as far as it will go? And this is something that really started me thinking. I mean, I have some pretty strange and wonderful dreams. And I have, you know, some goals and aspirations, maybe things that, you know, even from childhood I've thought about and just thought, oh, that's fanciful, that's just a fanciful dream. But God is the one that gave you those dreams in the first place. And you need to grab hold of them. And with those dreams that you think could never even come to pass, just like when Moses was there bashing the stick on the water, you're not relying on what you're capable of. You're not relying on situations and circumstances. You're relying on God, and he will bring those dreams to pass because he's the one that's put them within you. So the two questions I want you all to think about is, number one, do I want to enlarge the place of my tent for a start? And the second question is, if you do want to enlarge a place of your tent, how much by? I just want to finish by reading another one of the word for today's, which really just says it all of everything I've been speaking about. It's called Personal Growth. Enlarge the place of your tent, do not hold back. Lengthen your cords, strengthen your stakes. By the time most people are in their mid-30s, they have stopped acquiring any new skills or attitudes. Does that shock you? Stop and think, how long has it been since you acquired a new skill? How many new attitudes, like the can-do attitude, have you adopted lately? How bound are you to mechanical performance? Do you feel compelled to approach a problem the same way every time? Does a new idea light your fire or make you retreat into your shell? Are you addicted to predictability? Solomon says, above all and before all, do this, get wisdom. Chuck Swindoll says, living and learning go hand in hand, just like existing and expiring. The same hours and minutes that capture the wonder of a child deepen the rut of an adult. To them, learning is natural. To us, it is a nuisance. Which camp do you belong in? Remember Caleb. At 85, he was still growing and grabbing the future. When he should have been in comfortable retirement, he was out fighting giants and calming mountains. While his friends were yawning, he was yearning. Every time the sun came up, it was a new adventure for him. God says, enlarge the place of your tent. Do not hold back. Lengthen your cords. Strengthen your stakes. For you will spread out to the right hand and to the left. Hello, that is you he is talking to.
We sang today about God being in the praises of his people. And I just wanted to share this testimony. And it's a witness to what we've sung today. It's about the tsunami situation and how God changes the circumstance where he can be glorified. It's a lovely story, and it's an email that I received this week. And I'll just read it to you. It said, we know that 80% of the town of Malura in Asia was destroyed by the tsunami. Waves and 80% of the people all died. This is one of the towns that was hit the hardest. But there is a fantastic testimony to this. This particular town had 400 Christians. It was a Muslim town. And at Christmas, they wanted to celebrate Christmas. On December the 25th, they were not allowed to do so because of it being a Muslim town. They were told if they wanted to celebrate Christmas, they needed to go outside the city and onto a high hill to celebrate Christmas. Because the Christians desired to celebrate Christmas, the 400 believers left the city on December the 25th, and after they celebrated Christmas, they stayed overnight on that hill. As we all know, that morning on December 26th, there was the earthquake followed by the tsunami waves destroying most of the city of where these people lived. The 400 believers were on that mountain and they were all safe from destruction. Now the Muslims of this particular town are saying that God had punished them because they had not let the Christians celebrate their Christmas celebrations. Others are questioning why so many Muslims died while not even one of the Christians died. Had the Christians insisted on their rights to celebrate Christmas in the city, they would have all died, but because they humbled themselves and followed the advice of the Muslims, they all were spared destruction and can now testify to the marvellous protection that God gives his children. This is a testimony of the grace of God and the fact as believers we have no rights in the world. Our rights is come before the God, our God, the one and only judge of this world. Thank you, Jesus. A wonderful testimony that, and
Geraldine. I've had some very good fortune this week. I had to buy a new printer whatever, because my other one wouldn't work on my new computer. But a brother came up to me and said, "Here, the Lord's told me to give you this," and he paid for me printer scanner. So thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord. Anybody?